I'm going to look at the landscape from primarily a provider perspective today, and want to look at specifically the workforce and increasing care demands. As mentioned, Health HIV is a national nonprofit based in D.C. Hopefully we will still be in D.C. if it's not floating this time tomorrow. So our thoughts are with everybody on the East Coast right now. We work in capacity building, training and education, advocacy, and health services research. I have no disclosures based on today's presentation. Today we're hoping to look at the factors in the changing landscape in HIV prevention care and treatment. Obviously, it's an incredibly dynamic time, and you know, in the next 2 weeks, certainly we're going to see a sea change, if you will, one way or the other, if we're going to move forward in meaningful reform, or if we're going to recalibrate how we deliver healthcare. We want to look at the role of the HIV primary care provider, and I'll detail how we define that provider type, the current needs of providers, and the methods for addressing the HIV care continuum, especially in this changing environment. So if you look at, I also want to point out that this is part one. The part two on this topic is 12:30 today, and my colleague Michael Shankel from Health HIV is going to give you more detail specific to the survey that I'm going to present today. He'll be looking at it, incidents in more detail, stigma, and so forth. When we look at HIV incidents and management, there are more people living with HIV today, as we know. Over 1.2 million people with HIV in the U.S., and 20% are unaware of their status. And, you know, I always take a moment to think about that percentage, that, you know, you think this many years into this epidemic that we still have 20% of those who are positive and don't know their status is really alarming. I mean, it's just, it's nothing more than alarming. And so it shows the tremendous need to address HIV testing and everything along the continuum. When we look at the biomedical advances, thankfully, they've been significant. We have more antiretrovirals than ever before. We have combination therapies and significant advancements in treatment, and now being really an established, manageable chronic disease. At the same time, though, as care is being simplified, there are certainly people that are living with HIV for many, many years. The setting that they're being cared for in is changing rapidly, and community health centers are taking on more and more of the HIV care, certainly driven by healthcare reform and also by the National HIV/AIDS strategy. Yes? No, it's a great question, and we can detail that further. Two things. One is those numbers are from the CDC, and they have significant mechanisms to look at those projections and those estimates. Specific to D.C., and we can speak to you offline about this in great detail. We do a lot of work with the D.C. Department of Health, and the program that you're referencing is a program, just for everyone else's reference, where testing is being offered at the Department of Motor Vehicles, because what we've seen in D.C., as you point out, is we have the highest numbers in the country. And so looking at any potential point where we can provide HIV testing that is in an atypical setting, if you will. What was interesting, though, about that, and just to keep it top line, and we can provide detail as anyone would be interested, those that tested positive through the DMV program were very, very low, as you point out. The numbers were not what were expected, but that doesn't mean that programs that reach out to people in different settings shouldn't be continue to be explored, and that we shouldn't, you know, look at all avenues, but that the testing rates, those that tested positive through that program were not that significant. There's a lot of work being done, and we can talk to you about that offline, to look at what that means and to how the testing programs in D.C. are going to advance further. But there's a lot of discussion about looking at other locations as well as keeping that in place. Because that, you know, and obviously we have to look at what's most cost effective, but if we can capture one positive person through that program, to me that's beneficial. But, you know, we have to look at, the ways to do that in the most efficient way possible. But again, we can talk about that in more detail if you'd like. When we look at the trends in the workforce shortage was looming long before health reform. HRSA had estimated a shortage across the entire workforce, and you'll see a lot of variety of numbers here, but they're all going to make the case to you that there's a tremendous workforce shortage. In this case, they were referencing 35,000 surgeons having a shortage of. Estimated that 63,000 fewer physicians than needed by 2015, and that's, of course, very soon. The projected shortage of providers by 2020, and you see the numbers there, over 45,000 PCPs and over 46,000 specialists. And these shortages are going to worsen without increases in residency training, and there's a tremendous amount of data on that as well. We took a look at the Association of American Medical Colleges data that looked at supply and demand. So if you look at even 2015, certainly 2020, a shortage of over 91,000 physicians, and this is physicians, not providers in general, so just physicians, and that's 2020, which is tomorrow, really. So, I mean, this is a significant problem that, you know, where everyone is aware of, but when you really put it in a context of what does it mean and what is this going to mean for those with HIV, you're going to see some responses to that within this, but it's certainly something that is a real wake-up call. We look at trends in the employment setting. So where are those providers practicing? And basically by next year, less than one-third of physicians will be in private practice. Many electing go into larger systems, a lot moving into hospitals, for example, and so forth. You know, private practice in HIV is a non-starter anymore. The shifts are related to the burden of administrative responsibilities. I mean, we've all heard the stories of electronic health records, and you know, we have providers that we talk to every day that tell me stories. I had a story last week from a provider who said that she catches up on her EHRs at 3 in the morning. That, you know, she has to provide care all day and she doesn't have time to maintain and what's being asked of her. So 3 in the morning, she's catching up on her EHRs. And that's unfortunately the reality that we're facing. The stability of the health systems, of course, as we look at reform, the hours being offered, and some interesting connections here that, you know, patient-centered medical home, for example, and the movement towards that. One of the criteria for that is expanded hours, and not only a culturally competent staff and a friendly reception area, but convenient hours for people. So the trend is to actually move towards having longer hours and more flexible hours, but then the reverse is the impact it has on the workforce in having to address that. So best intentions that also provide additional stressors on the workforce. Job security and increased pay, and we have a lot of data on pay. There's always a lot of talk about, and I I disagree with this overall just based on all the providers I know, but a lot of people just say, well, it's just a pay issue, and just pay them more and it'll resolve itself, and you just pay more and you're going to solve the shortage. But, you know, we all know providers who are doing it because they care about people and they're not motivated only by their pay, and that there are obviously a lot of other factors related. So when we look at the HIV workforce specifically, approximately 4,500 providers in the U.S., we talked a little bit about this. The current workforce composed of first-generation providers, those providers who came into HIV because nobody else was taking care of people with HIV. And so a lot of LGBT providers who were coming in to take care of their friends. And now we see more and more racial and ethnic minority providers coming into HIV care, which is very encouraging. Nonetheless, 50% of the current workforce is retiring in the next 5 to 10 years. So you start to connect all the dots here. These statistics become alarming. And the Ryan White Part C clinics are having difficulty recruiting clinicians, as everybody is. This is a graphic we put together based on data that we've collected and some estimates that we've conducted specifically. And basically, you look at a fractured landscape because you have the pressure of more and more people coming into care, and you have less providers there to provide that care. So here we estimated 500 to 600,000 newly insured by 2014 coming into HIV care. We've actually lowered that estimate, and you'll see on a different slide, because of the movement in the state exchanges and potential with Medicaid as to what that will mean in patient numbers. But our surveys, and the blue and the orange bars show the two most recent surveys that both showed consistently that providers were seeing an increase in their HIV caseload. On the other side, we spoke about the HIV specialist shortage and the PCP shortage, yet HIV PCPs were surveyed, and they said they are able to provide the care to newly diagnosed with HIV. We talked about a little bit practice management, compensation, and reimbursement, but in this context, tied to performance and patient satisfaction. So what that will mean to the increased perceptual demands even on providers. EHR is again talking about that in the context of supporting revenue now and the enhanced skills required. The impact of reform, we know that with the expansion to the uninsured, and here is where we lowered the estimate from the previous slide to 400 to 600, and this is a moving target, and, you know, I think every day you're going to get a different number based on what's happening, and, you know, obviously everybody is waiting until the election to start to fine-tune their projections, but nonetheless we're going to see newly insured no matter what. Coming into care, and we're also going to, you know, continue to see an increased caseload. Just very briefly, the AIDS strategy, as you may know, has three goals: prevent new infections, increase access to care, and reduce health disparities. And you see in regards to new infections a few metrics that are being used to look at the strategy's success. There's tremendous activity by a lot of the federal agencies to meet the goals of the strategy, and you'll see more and more of that moving forward. Our survey, we call the HIV Primary Care Survey, and the second annual one last year, we filled it with Medscape, looking at HIV specialists and PCPs. There were 45 questions, both quantitative and qualitative, and it was a convenience sample that was not incentivized. And I think that's really significant because you'll see we had over 1,800 respondents to a very long survey since it was about the landscape with no incentive. And this year's survey is going in the field next week. So we'll certainly be announcing the results of that in January, and I think it'll be even more interesting findings with this one. We looked at defining the provider. Respondents self-identified as one of three provider types: a credentialed HIV specialist, an HIV PCP, or a PCP who doesn't provide HIV care. Because again, we wanted to look at the landscape. We wanted to see what the movement is overall. So there you see the definition of those provider types. And then you'll see how we put that into some context about what this HIV PCP looks like. So this shows basically the 1,800 respondents, and then when we looked at taking the PharmDs out and the registered nurses out, and we drilled down on 627 providers, those who write prescriptions, for the purposes of the data to follow here. So the profile of this typical HIV PCP, you can see here, and this is also one of the data sets that Michael's going to detail for you in more detail this afternoon. But what's key here is that this is typically a female MD in an urban community, living in the South, working in a community health center. So very much in line with the other data we were talking about. When you look at it from a word cloud, and this is the composite of all the provider types together and how they determine the state of HIV and primary care, and they basically said good. But HIV primary care, good for the patients. When you dissect the different provider types, some said average, some said great, but overall the average was that it was good, and we'll see how that changes this year. Just very briefly here, in caseloads, they indicated that the size and needs of their caseload made it difficult to see additional patients. Their time spent, you can see the breakout here, the HIV provider, so they focus on co-occurring conditions as well as on treating HIV. They obviously are looking at other chronic disease management, and cardiovascular being the highest. Also note Hep C in there, that'll be critical moving forward. Barriers to care, the barriers to PCPs who aren't providing HIV care, many of them felt they lacked competency on HIV treatment. That doesn't mean they lacked interest, and that's a key message. That the interest is there, but they don't feel the competency is there yet. So obviously, medical education will go a long way to changing that. Community health centers were rated lower in their ability to provide the care, but obviously if you connect it, if they're feeling that there's an interest, but the competency isn't there yet, but if the attention is given, if the education and training are provided, that should start to change that. And the reality is, it has to change because that's where people are going to be getting their care. So it has to be impacted, whether we, you know, agree with it or not, that's where it's moving and that's where it has to happen. HIV PCPs are least confident in managing adverse effects, but these are lower percentages. So the HIV PCPs are more confident overall in treating HIV, as you would expect. And then PCPs not providing HIV care expressed interest, obviously, in education specific to testing and counseling. And that's key, I think, in relation to your question as well, that this becomes another area. If we can get primary care providers who aren't treating HIV to any great extent, but if they can be offering HIV testing, think of the capture points. Think of how many more people can be tested in a very, very meaningful way. And the interest is there, and that's key, that with all the demands on PCPs and on health centers, that they still show an interest in this, because at the heart, it's community health. And these providers know that they can do their part. And I'm going to just very quickly wrap up here because I'm out of time. The HIV providers are least confident in treating hepatitis. Michael is going to go into this one in more detail, so I won't talk about this right now. This is readiness to accept the newly insured and transition from Ryan White funding. I also want to just very briefly mention we run an HIV mentoring program to build the capacity of the HIV workforce, focused on areas of highest unmet need. And it's providing HIV experts as mentors to providers who want to build and expand their capacity to provide HIV care. So it's for physicians, NPs, and PAs. And they're offered significant mentoring and a variety of educational resources. We do this as part of a positive charge program that's funded by Bristol-Myers Squibb. It's guided by a steering committee. The experts are identified and involved in a program where we basically have them complete an assessment. We level set them, pair them with a mentor, and engage them in a curriculum basically to move them along in advancing their clinical stage of HIV care. So ideally, the mentoring moves providers up a clinical stage in their proficiency and ultimately in their capacity to provide quality HIV care, not just to provide the care, but to provide quality care. And we're looking at what models work, what the demographics do in impacting it, what engagements work the best, and also the impact it has on the mentor, keeping those currently providing high-volume HIV care fully engaged. So maybe we can keep them from retiring for a while so that that can be another way of impacting the workforce. For more information, there's my contact information, and I'm supposed to leave that slide up so it can continue to be recorded. Oh, okay. Thank you.